The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
There we go. So, for those of you who I've not met before, my name is Andrea Fella. I'm the co-teacher here at IMC. And tonight I'd like to talk about mindfulness. We talk about mindfulness a lot here. It's a central teaching of the Buddha, a central quality of the Buddha. I feel like the Buddha actually recognized it as a quality that really serves us in finding our way to happiness. It's a pretty ordinary quality of mind. It's just a natural quality in our minds that this capacity for us to know what's happening while it's happening. It's just a part of our kind of functioning as human beings, this capacity to know what's happening while it's happening. And yet the Buddha recognized this very ordinary quality of mind and highlighted it and said, you know, this is really worth cultivating, and it's worth cultivating in a particular way. And so I'd like to explore that with you a little bit tonight. So some other ways to describe mindfulness, the Pali term is sati, and that Pali term generally is related to the root word memory. And so to some extent, mindfulness is about remembering. Remembering the present moment, I like to think. It's about remembering the present moment. So some other ways to describe this, other words that we could use to talk about mindfulness, simply being present, knowing what it's happening while it's happening, awareness. I think of it as this kind of self-reflexive capacity of mind, capacity of our minds to know the present, as distinct from the capacity of our minds to kind of be aware. There's a kind of awareness that happens all the time. If you pay attention to your experience, you'll see that sometimes awareness is functioning, our mind is functioning, there's consciousness functioning, and we're recognizing things, whether or not we're consciously aware of that. I know probably most of you have had the experience of driving and then getting to the place where you are and not remembering actually so much of the journey. And yet your mind, there's a form of awareness that's happening while you're driving. I mean, it's not that you're unconscious. So there's that difference, that distinction between that kind of awareness that happens all the time and this kind of brightening of the mind that recognizes itself. It's the mind recognizing itself. Mindfulness, that's another way to think about it. Now the Buddha, this capacity of mind, this kind of very simple reflexive capacity of mind, is just, as I said, an ordinary quality that comes in our minds. And everybody has it as a human being. It's, I think, in a way, part of what makes us human, this capacity to see, to be able to see our selves, to have the mind be aware of itself. And yet the Buddha suggested that it's not just cultivating that capacity for the mind to see itself. In and of itself, that capacity for the mind to see itself is pretty neutral and could be used in many ways. But the Buddha suggested that there's a wise way to cultivate that quality. And some of the qualities that come along with wise mindfulness are a non-reactive, non-judgmental attitude, such that whatever we're seeing, we can recognize just as something happening in the present moment, just something arising in the present moment, as opposed to judging it or wanting it to be some other way. So wise mindfulness includes this capacity to be aware, but in a non-reactive, non-judgmental way for whatever is arising. So it's this, another way to put it is that wise mindfulness is the capacity to recognize any experience, any state of mind, as being a state of mind. So think about anger, for example. Typically, we don't recognize anger just as, oh, anger is arising in the mind. That's not typically how we would recognize it. We might be aware that we're angry, but we're also involved in the anger. We're engaged in figuring out how to act on that anger. This wise mindfulness brings in this attitude of interest in recognizing, oh, anger is arising in the mind. Restlessness is arising in the mind. Restlessness is like this. Frustration is like this. Confusion is like this. So that it's got just this very simple, non-judgmental, equanimous perspective. So with respect to our reactive emotions, what mindfulness allows us to do is to neither repress them, it allows them to be present in our hearts and minds, these reactive emotions, so neither repressing them nor acting on them, which is I think this is where the Buddha really was brilliant in recognizing that capacity to simply witness our minds leads, that the mind begins to find its way to well-being when we neither act on nor repress all of these reactive emotions that we have. So in our usual state of mind and the way we usually engage in the world, we're pretty much acting out of our habitual tendencies, our patterns and habits that have been cultivated from the way we were raised, the way our parents taught us, what we learned in school. All of our experiences have come together to kind of create a set of habits and patterns that make us up. In some ways, what we think of as ourself is a big collection of habits. And often, in our usual state of mind, we're acting out of those habits in a kind of an unconscious way. We're not really consciously aware of some of the deeper motivations. We are familiar with some of our habits. We're familiar with some of the ways we react and respond to the world. But we don't really seem to have much control over it a lot of the time. We find ourselves reacting as usual, as opposed to being able to kind of witness where that reactivity is coming from. And so in our mindfulness practice, we begin the possibility, one of the possibilities and beauties of mindfulness practice is that we can begin to actually uncover and be able to be present for these deeper currents that are typically below the level of what we're consciously aware of. And this week, we're doing a daily life practice retreat, a non-residential daily life practice retreat. And I'd really like to emphasize that in daily life is a great place to explore these patterns and habits, because daily life is what provides a lot of the friction that takes us into our habits. And so as we begin to cultivate mindfulness, we cultivate mindfulness in the sitting posture and in meditation and formal practice, and we start to get familiar with mindfulness and how to be mindful. And that, at least in our sitting practice, perhaps begins to give us a sense that we can see more deeply into our habits. When we're, in particular, sitting in stillness, we get to watch how our mind creates things. You know, we get to see our mind shooting out into a conversation with somebody and how we got all frustrated in that conversation, and we see that there's this creation in the mind. With more continuous mindfulness, we begin to actually see how those emotions, those reactions, are actually created. I like to think of, we often think of things as being below the horizon of our subconscious, of motivations, of habits kind of coming out of this terrain of the subconscious. I like to think that there isn't really a firm boundary between conscious and subconsciousness. That what mindfulness does is it begins to lower the horizon of the subconscious so that we begin to see, you know, we may see the arising of a thought, we may see the arising of a memory of talking with a friend. And then see how in the present moment we're reacting to that memory right here and now. And see, oh, there's frustration created right in the moment. It's quite amazing how deep mindfulness can go into where our patterns and habits arise from. And so more presence of mind, more mindfulness, begins to allow the mind to seeing where it's coming from, seeing how the mind is creating its own struggles, its own suffering, seeing that the thought and the reaction to the thought are creating the frustration, as opposed to it being like some reserve of frustration that's being tapped into. It's actually being created in the moment. As our minds see that, our minds themselves begin to find the way to let go of those habits and patterns. It seems like magic. It's not magic. But the I think partly it happens this way because our minds really want to be happy. Our system, our organism is designed to head towards well-being. And yet our habits and our patterns are kind of short-sighted. They're looking for kind of quick hits of well-being, just a little moment of happiness here and there. And what we begin to see with the mindfulness is that those quick hits of happiness, those little, you know, trying to get what we want here and there, in that very process, we are tightening, contracting, trying to hold on to things, trying to push things away. And that very trying to get what we want in the short-sighted way is adding to non-well-being. And with mindfulness, the mind begins to recognize that our usual way of going about things doesn't actually conduce to well-being. And so the mind itself begins to change gears and to shift course, to let go of those habits and patterns. When the mind itself sees how it's contributing to its own unhappiness, it starts to let go of it. Thank goodness our minds are designed this way. If we have the courage and the interest in bringing mindfulness to our experience, we will move towards happiness. So cultivating mindfulness. How do we cultivate mindfulness? Initially, we often give instructions here around cultivating mindfulness, around turning our attention to a particular experience. Often we encourage the breath, bringing our attention to the experience of breathing, knowing that you're breathing while you're breathing. So this is bringing that quality of mindfulness. You know what's happening while it's happening. Breathing is happening all the time. So it's a great place to check in. You always have something you're carrying with you that's happening in the present moment that you know if you're aware of it as it's happening, you're mindful. So it begins to encourage that quality of mindfulness, that capacity of knowing what's happening while it's happening. So the benefits of this are that it's relatively easy to notice, to recognize when we're connected with it. It's pretty clear when we're connected with an experience like the breath or we're not. And so that gives us some feedback. We've got some feedback going that when we recognize that our mind is doing something other than paying attention to the breathing, often it means we've gotten lost in thought and we come back and cultivate that capacity to be present. So we begin to cultivate this quality of presence of mind. So it supports a settling down of the mind to do this, to pick something, an anchor for the attention. It supports a loosening of reactivity. It orients us towards something here and now as opposed to our habits of mind. So there's many benefits to cultivating mindfulness in this way. And yet often people still report and describe that it's not so easy to make the transition out of cultivating mindfulness in a still, silent posture with your eyes closed to cultivating mindfulness in the midst of your activities, in the midst of what's happening in your day. And it makes sense in a way because the way we're cultivating mindfulness in the formal practice, especially initially, is to highlight one particular experience and give that some preference so that we're knowing when we're present or not. Our eyes are closed, we're sitting still. So, you know, when we go out into the world and start trying to cultivate mindfulness in the midst of our activities, we lose a lot of the supports that we have in our sitting meditation. We lose the stillness of our posture. We lose the kind of connectivity with the single experience because we're having to engage. We're having to connect with content. We're having to deal with situations and cars and people and ideas and family members and the world. We're having to deal with the world. And it's not so simple in daily life to simply kind of withdraw into this place where, oh, I can just be with the breath. So this transition to being mindful in daily life, this is an area that is somewhat challenging for us. So I'd like to explore another way to cultivate mindfulness. Aside from that way that I just described of picking an object and holding the attention there. So I'm going to start this part of the conversation by saying that I believe it's in the Abhidhamma, the Buddhist psychology, where it says that the proximate cause for mindfulness, so the thing that encourages mindfulness, is mindfulness. So, how do we begin? what's that like? How is it even possible? Well, fortunately, there is this kind of mindfulness that appears spontaneously. It's called unprompted mindfulness. It's mindfulness that just arises because it's a natural capacity of our minds, and it happens to us. Thank goodness. It just happens to us. Then there is what's called prompted mindfulness, which is when you are already aware, when you're already mindful, you can use that mindfulness to help you remember to be mindful. That's usually where the practice of mindfulness is focused, is on the prompted mindfulness. When you are aware, you turn your attention to the breath and you, or to other experience, to hearing, whatever you're attending to, and you kind of keep reminding yourself, okay, I'm aware, continue. So that's the usual way that our mindfulness practices work, is with cultivating this prompted mindfulness. This unprompted mindfulness is a kind of it's a secret doorway for us, I think, especially for daily life practice. It's a secret doorway because it happens all the time. Prompted mindfulness takes effort. Prompted mindfulness requires some energy. It doesn't take a lot of energy, I have to say. I mean, we often pick up way more energy and carry mindfulness around like it's a backpack of mindfulness, and I'm going to carry this with me. And it kind of weighs a lot sometimes with a level of heavy effort that we put into it. So even the prompted mindfulness we could have a much lighter touch with. Just like right now, how much effort does it take for you to be aware of the sensations of your hands? How much effort does it take for you to be aware of the sensations of your lips touching together? And how much effort does it take for you to notice the sensations of your hips touching the chair or cushion or bench? It doesn't take much to prompt that mindfulness for just a moment. But what we have to do is remember to do it again and again and again. Just that light touch over and over and over again. So the prompted mindfulness does take some amount of effort. The unprompted mindfulness is effortless. It just happens to us. It just arises from time to time. But what typically happens in our daily lives, actually this kind of mindfulness arises a lot, way more than you realize, way more than you can possibly comprehend, actually, until you really start seeing it. This unprompted mindfulness happens a lot, but what happens with that moment of mindfulness, that moment of recognizing what's happening in the moment, is that we immediately leap onto the thing that we've recognized and start doing something with it. So we get a split second of that unprompted mindfulness. It comes, and then we're noticing something. We're seeing some movement in our field of vision, and it's a dog, and oh, look at that dog, and oh, isn't that a cute dog, and oh, that reminds me of that dog I saw the other day, and we're lost. You know, we're no longer aware that we've seen a dog. But there was a moment, a split second of awareness and that recognition in the present moment of that experience. But what we typically do is jump on it immediately and start doing something with it. So the another way to explore cultivating mindfulness is to begin to get interested in these moments of unprompted mindfulness, these moments when mindfulness spontaneously arises. A way to explore this, there's different ways to do this. In the sitting practice, I'll talk about the sitting practice first because this may be an easier place to recognize it. This unprompted mindfulness happens a lot in your sitting practice. Every time your mind wanders, at some point, you remember, right? You remember, and it's like, oh, the mind's wandering. I'm not paying attention to the breath. Come back to the breath. So that moment when you've recognized that your mind is wandering, that's a moment of unprompted mindfulness. You didn't have to do that. It just happened. Spontaneously, mindfulness came back. And what we're often doing in that moment is judging ourselves. for not having been mindful. We're judging ourselves for having gotten lost in thought. What I'm suggesting here is, rather than judging yourself, get interested in this magical re-arising of mindfulness. It's amazing, this quality that just magically reappears. It's not magic. It's actually got, there's some causes and conditions associated with mindfulness reappearing. But we're not doing it. It's not something we're in charge of. And so in your sitting practice, a way to begin to explore this is to get interested. I mean, when I first started recognizing that this was an important and interesting moment to pay attention to, it's like, it stopped bothering me that my mind wandered. Because every time, if my mind wandered 100 times in a 45-minute sitting, that gave me 100 opportunities to notice this spontaneous mindfulness, this effortless mindfulness. So in your sitting practice, you can begin to recognize just what you're waking up into. In the moment when you remember, see if you can just recognize that mindfulness has re-arisen. In that moment, you can kind of begin to get a sense of the quality of mindfulness itself, because there's a distinction between what the mind feels like when it's present, aware, and what the mind feels like when it's lost in thought. We can't necessarily be clearly aware of what the mind feels like when it's lost in thought, but in that moment when mindfulness comes back, there's a lingering memory of that, what it was like a moment ago. And the clarity or the possibility of recognizing this is what it's like to be mindful is right there in that moment. And so you can begin to get interested in what is mindfulness? What is this quality of mindfulness itself? It's got a kind of a brightness to it, a clarity, a sense that, it's that sense of knowing what's happening while it's happening. So sometimes it can be very clear, this moment when mindfulness returns. It's like a bubble bursting, just a very clear distinction. Other times it may feel more like coming out of the mud. It's kind of like, you know, there's this pull towards thinking. And, you know, you may get a little bit of mindfulness and then you're back sunk in the thoughts. And then a moment of, oh, thinking, and then you're back sunk in the thoughts. And then a little moment of, oh, right, mindful, and then pulled back. And so it might not be very clear sometimes. So it just, as best you can, begin to recognize what it's like to be mindful. As you begin to get familiar with that, and this has been a real practice of mine, particularly in daily life. I explored it in my sitting practice and then began looking at it also in daily life. As we get familiar with what it feels like, with what the experience of mindfulness is, then those spontaneous moments of mindfulness, those spontaneous, unprompted mindfulness that happens a lot for us, begin to point themselves out to us. Because we're familiar, we're more familiar with what that quality is, and so we recognize it when it happens. So this is a very light way to practice mindfulness, to recognize those moments when mindfulness spontaneously re-arises. This happens to us all the time in our daily life. You know, we're walking across the street and suddenly we know we're walking across the street. We're reaching for a glass and we recognize we're reaching for a glass. It's not that we have to stop suddenly. It's like walking across the street. Oh, I've become mindful. What do I do with this? It's just noticing what's obvious. Very simply, you know, you're reaching for the glass and you become mindful. You just keep doing what's happening. It's a pointing to what the mind is already aware of. Mindfulness has arisen and it's already aware of something. There's nothing to do with it. We don't have to, at that point, say, oh, mindfulness has re-arisen. Oh, I'm walking. Let me put my attention in my feet and be mindful of stepping. That would be cultivating prompted mindfulness and can be helpful. In daily life, what I have found in my own experience is that that tends to feel too heavy. People tell me, I don't have time to do that. You know, I've got other things I need to be thinking about or doing. But this unprompted mindfulness, having the awareness of what's happening in the moment, what are we already aware of? It's very light. It's already happening. We don't have to do anything. So just beginning, it's very receptive, and beginning to cultivate that capacity. It's already there in your minds. That capacity to recognize mindfulness and what is obvious in the moment. That's a kind of a mantra I sometimes use, is when I recognize that I'm aware, it's like, what's obvious? What's obvious here? Oh, walking or seeing or hearing or thinking or whatever is there. We don't have to do anything with it. So the feeling of being aware, this is one piece that I just want to take a few minutes to talk about, and then I hope to have a couple minutes for some questions. We can sometimes confuse this kind of brightness of mind or this quality of mindfulness itself, the sense of being aware. We can confuse it with states of mind. So for instance, we may find that when we're mindful, things may tend to become clear or bright or precise, or there may be some sense of ease that happens. You know, so we may begin to associate being mindful with things that happen when we become mindful. And then we may begin to judge ourselves and think we're not being mindful if it doesn't feel like that. So, you know, we're being mindful and the mind is foggy and dull and sleepy, and it's like, wow, sleepiness. It's like, there's no way I can be mindful of this sleepiness. I'm too sleepy to be mindful. How many of you have had that thought? Yes. The mind that is sleepy, it's like it's got a fog over it, right? It's kind of, it's like it's got a fog over it. But what the difficulty around being mindful while sleepy is generally that you've got some agenda in your mind around what you want to be paying attention to. So, you know, you want to be paying attention to the breath, and there's this fog there, and you can't hardly feel the breath. But if you can have the thought, I'm too sleepy to be mindful, I'd propose that you actually have enough mindfulness to be aware of the fog itself. That a large part of why it feels like you can't be mindful is because you're trying to be mindful of something through the fog. It's like, you know, if we have a foggy day out there, which we'll have a bunch of coming up here in the coming weeks, you know, when the fog descends on the Bay Area, you know, things aren't sharp and precise. You can't look 200 yards down the road and see what's down there. But you know your eye is working. It's just that there's fog in the atmosphere. You can clearly know the fog is there. The eye isn't, it's not a problem with the eye. And so likewise with the mindfulness, we can be aware of a state of mind of restlessness, of spacing out, of dullness, of sleepiness, so many different states that we think are in the way of mindfulness are typically only in the way because we're not willing to wake up to what's already here. What's already here. So again, when you become aware, notice what's obvious. It may be foggy mind. It may be dullness. Over and over again, I see in my own experience, like in this last sitting, when we were sitting before, my mind was quite busy initially. And I could feel the kind of spinning energy of the mind. And if I had tried, it was quite a strong restless energy in the mind. And if I had tried to direct it to the breath, it would have been a lot of tension in the mind. But I could just rest knowing, oh, the mind is restless. There's restlessness in the mind. And it would settle, and then I would lose mindfulness for a little while, and then it would spin back into restlessness. Oh, there's restlessness again. And over the course of the 45 minutes, the mind slowly let go of that restlessness with very little struggle, just by naturally knowing that that was what was happening. So this is a very different approach to mindfulness in a way, not to choose what's happening. And this is another, to choose the object of our attention, this is another way that we confuse mindfulness. We think we're not being mindful, or we think mindfulness is about being able to pick what we're being aware of. So sometimes the mind is in the state when it can do that. Sometimes it can choose the breath. Other times it can't. And yet that doesn't mean that that the mind can't be aware of what's happening. Again, there's often agendas in our mind about what we're trying to do. So if you find you're having trouble being mindful, a struggle with the practice itself, look at whether you're trying to do something counter to the kind of state that the mind is naturally in. And can you acknowledge or recognize, oh, this is actually what's happening right now. This is what's going on. So one other distinction or way, difference in that mindfulness feels. Sometimes when we begin to get a sense of a kind of a continuity of mindfulness and begin to have a sense of being able to observe our experience, we get more of a sense of the observer, of being able to just witness what's happening. And there's it's a lovely experience, because there's a kind of a sense of having some distance between the stuff that's happening in our minds and the space of being aware of it. So sometimes it can feel like that, and often that's an early sign or an early way that we recognize that mindfulness is getting a little stronger, because we have more of a sense of that observer. We're aware of that. Oh, there's anger arising. You know, there's a sense of being aware and the awareness of what's arising. Frustration, happiness, confusion, boredom. And there's this observer, a kind of a sense of one observing. So sometimes it feels that way. And again, if you have this idea that when I'm mindful more continuously, that's what it's going to feel like, you may be inadvertently or kind of without intending to searching for an experience when something else may be presenting itself. One experience I've seen that happens, again, as the mindfulness gets more continuous, is rather than it feeling like there's a separation of observer and observed, it's as if the mindfulness, the knowing, and the experience are completely intertwined. There's no separation between the observer and the observed. It's like the mindfulness is coming up right inside of the experience. And that feels different than having a separation. So there's so many different ways. I probably haven't even experienced all the different ways that it can feel when mindfulness is present. But what I've begun to appreciate is that often there is a little bit of confusion with the states that arise and the knowing of them. And so just beginning to be curious and recognize, to not have to, not have an agenda for how is it supposed to feel. You know, if you are aware, you might be able to ask yourself the question, am I aware? If the answer is yes, mindfulness is present. If you can even ask the question, mindfulness is present. And in that moment, what's obvious? It may not be anything that you expect. And actually, that's how freedom will unfold, because we have no idea what we're looking for in terms of freedom. We do not know what that experience is. And so if we're looking for something, we'll probably miss it. So kind of more an openness to what's here, what's here. So we have a couple minutes if there's any comments or questions. Yeah.
Why does it seem to be so?
Could you wait for the mic?
What?
It's on, yeah.
Okay. Why does it seem to be so difficult for us to grow from being children to adults without getting caught up in all these patterns of thought and without losing a sense of our mindfulness?
Well, I think it's, you know, again, it's kind of the way our minds are created, that we are trying to find pleasantness, happiness. You know, we're trying to find happiness. And our system, the kind of the most obvious ways that we find happiness are by getting what we want. And that getting what we want tends to, we get what we want, we have a hit of happiness. We have a moment of, yeah, things are good, things are right. Now, that moment of happiness doesn't last very long because the thing goes away or we get tired of it or the novelty wears off. And then it's like, well, when was the last time I was happy? Well, it was when I got what I wanted. And so we start looking for something to want. The kind of short-sighted part of that is that the very wanting, the very, you know, trying to get what we want, that right there, that wanting right there is the crux of our struggle. That wanting is full of delusion, because that wanting is telling us, in order to be happy, I need to be satisfied. That wanting is not going to tell you, in order to be happy, this wanting can disappear. If the wanting goes away, which it will because it's a state of mind, if you are willing to hang out with wanting instead of following through on it, if you're willing to hang out with it and watch it disappear, you will notice, if you can see it vanish, which is possible, it feels like being released from a vice grip. Now, that is a different kind of happiness and is actually more deeply satisfying. But the mind doesn't, like, naturally find its way there because it's so caught up in the cycle of getting what I want, because that's where it's found happiness in the past. So, you know, that getting what we want, actually, there's two reasons why that creates happiness. One is because we've gotten what we wanted, and the other is that the wanting has gone away. And actually, that's the larger part of the ease that happens when we get what we want. But it's hard to see that, and it really, I think, took the brilliance of the Buddha to point to it. You know, it's not obvious. It's really not obvious. It becomes more obvious when we start to see how our minds work. And with mindfulness, we see the pain of the wanting, the contraction there, and the ease that happens when the wanting goes away, and we learn a whole new way to happiness, and the mind begins to gravitate towards that. So I need to stop. Thank you for your attention.